This is Fresh Air. Some of you who listen to our rock and roll historian Ed Ward each week probably figure he just knows all this stuff about rock, chart positions, birth dates, and tragic personality flaws. But Ed says he couldn't write his pieces for us without a bunch of other people's research he reads in liner notes and books. He has a review of some of the latest rock and roll books.
1990's been a good year for rock books. I've got 15 of them sitting here, including two novels. The novels, Laurie Colwyn's Goodbye Without Leaving and Mark Childress's stupefyingly boring retelling of Elvis's early career, Tender, aren't really worth bothering with. So we turn to the world of fact. The 50s didn't get much play this year, but Thunder's Mouth Press did reprint James Brown's autobiography, which was ignored when it was first published a few years ago. It's an amazing collection of James's one-of-a-kind opinions and self-myth-making, with some facts mixed in.
Watch me! Watch me! I got it! Watch me! I got it! Hey! I got something that makes me want to shout. I got something that tells me what it's all about. I got soul, and I'm super bad.
The only other notable book from this period is Joel Selvin's rather worshipful biography of Ricky Nelson, Idol for a Generation. Its main problem is evident right there in its title. Nelson was, of course, no such thing, but reading about his long decline is fascinating. As for revelations, Selvin proves that drugs were not involved in the plane crash that claimed Nelson on New Year's Eve 1985. There's also some hot innuendo about his two sons, who are now the light metal group Nelson. Phil Spector was a child of the 50s who helped invent the 60s. Few people were in a better position to observe him than his ex-wife, Ronnie Spector of the Ronettes.
Sometimes we'll fight. I won't really care. And I'll know it's gonna be alright. But we got so much we share.
She's now written her autobiography, Be My Baby, with Vince Waldron. Ronnie peers seductively off the dust jacket, so this looks like a heaping helping of sex, drugs, and rock and roll. But if that's what you're looking for, you're going to be disappointed. The sex happens off the page, except for several steamy sessions with John Lennon, which end with Ronnie telling him no. The drugs are the alcohol she consumed, mostly alone in Spector's mansion, to block herself off from the fact that she was imprisoned there. And the rock and roll pretty much ends with her marriage to the overprotective, paranoid Spector. There's the usual AA stuff and happy second marriage, but not much insight into Ronnie or her life and times. It could be, of course, that rock musicians are just thick. Certainly that's the impression I walked away with from reading Rolling Stone bassist Bill Wyman's autobiography, Stone Alone, which he wrote with Ray Coleman. Close to 600 pages long, it ends at the Hyde Park concert following Brian Jones' death in 1969 and features appendices with Rolling Stone's legal papers and every gig, broadcast, and record the Stones did in those years. The text also tells you Wyman's bank balance every couple of weeks and details of all the girls he slept with, lusted after, or fondled from the time he was 8 years old. I literally fell asleep twice trying to read Stone Alone, but the book does pick up as Wyman details Brian Jones's slow decline into death. And no, I haven't read A.E. Hotchner's book, Blown Away, which purports to reveal that Brian Jones was murdered and who did it. But Wyman convinces me that Brian did it to himself. There are a bunch of Jimi Hendrix books out for the 25th anniversary of his death, but I only read two of them. Inside the Experience is drummer Mitch Mitchell's account of his years with Hendrix, and as such it's fairly interesting, but co-author John Platt has padded Mitchell's words with dull connective material, and all the color photos, uncredited, bloat this into a $27.50 monster that's not worth the money. On the other hand, Charles Shar Murray, one of Britain's best rock writers, has produced a masterpiece in Crosstown Traffic, a book on Hendrix that examines his relationship to blues, black pop music, rock and roll, jazz, and American society in general.
Oh!
Murray has a knack for making connections and producing a masterful analysis of a lot more than just Jimi Hendrix. This was also the year when some serious attention was paid to the business of music. Frederick Dannen wrote Hitmen, a horrifying expose of independent promotion men. Dorothy Wade and Justine Picardy did a good biography of Atlantic Records founder Ahmet Erdogan, Music Man. Between them, these books paint an all-too-realistic picture of the way things really work in the biz, and I can't recommend them enough. And of course, there's my friend Robert Draper's account of Rolling Stone, The Uncensored History, which modesty forbids my praising. I should also add that Grill Marcus, another friend, has a new edition of his famous book of essays, Mystery Train. And Robert Christgau, the self-styled Dean of American Rock Critics, has come forth with Christgau's Record Guide, The 80s, which reviews and grades 3,000 records and, I think, also shows a critic losing enthusiasm and perspective for his work. So there I was, figuring I had the year's rock books wrapped up when in came Timothy White's Rock Lives, 700 pages of profiles and interviews. Sorry, Tim, I know you're good, but after Tender and Stone Alone and all the rest, I just can't do it. It's time to read something without a beat.
Ed Ward writes for the Austin Chronicle.